So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 115. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week, it's all about Thrawn Revisited. And our new segment, episode by episode, we're going into the first episode of Clone Wars, because last week we went into the Clone Wars movie. As always, I am Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Ben. Hey, Ben.
Hello. It's good to be back.
Welcome back. I was expecting a little bit of a hello there, since we're going to be doing Clone Wars, and we had
well,
a little...
Okay, you know, but like Obi-Wan's not in this episode, though.
Yeah, we'll get to it. And we also have Evan from the JodoCast joining us. Hey, Evan.
Hey there. I was going to be the one to try to make hello there a thing, but...
Yeah, I know. You probably would have.
That's all right.
Maybe it's treason then. Anyway, we're getting into that. The prequel.
I love democracy.
It's not Evan Kenobi. It's Ben Kenobi. I'm just gonna put that out there.
It's Ben Kenobi. Okay. Anyway, yeah. if you want to get involved in the conversation, guys, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. You can also leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including Thrawn Alliances, which as an audiobook is amazing. It also includes Whisper Sync, so if you are the Kindle audiobook fan, it'll synchronize where you are at on both devices, so you can listen to it before you go to bed or read in bed and then listen to it on the drive to work or something, which is pretty cool. We've also launched our Patreon at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Check it out. There's a bunch of different perks. We also have merchandise for sale on our website. T-shirts and button packs are available. Guys, it is time for our first bit of information in the news. I'll be honest with you right now. News is a little slow. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have noticed that in the last week or so. Haven't gotten a whole lot of stuff since the release of that picture. That JJ tweeted out with the first set, you know, after they started filming. Makes sense. You know, they're going to clam up a little bit. But we do have some interesting things. This week, Dave Filoni has opened up and did an interview and talked about the pressures of bringing the Clone Wars back. Did you guys get a chance to read this article from Geek Tyrant?
Yes.
So
yeah, I got to have a look at it. I mean, he talks about wanting to make sure that what they do is better each season than what they've done before, and it's very obvious to see that that is something that he and his crew excel at, since...
It's true.
I mean, season one is, like, good because it's Star Wars. I wouldn't call it great, but then each successive one is dramatically better.
I'll agree with you that, and I know, Ben, you haven't seen Clone Wars, so I'm excited that you've seen the first episode, and you're going to talk about it with us on this week's episode by episode. But it is, you know, I will say Clone Wars Season 1 is good because it's Star Wars. And it sets it all up, you know what I mean? It sets it all up. Whereas each season of it, after it, gets better and better, and then obviously Rebels was just awesome from the get-go. It did take, you know, even Season 1 of Rebels did take a little bit of time setting stuff up. But I definitely see where he's coming from at this. Like when they came back for a new season, obviously the fans are so excited about it. And he talks about how people grew up with this, and it was massive. It really was. You know, it's been 10 years since Clone Wars premiered. You know, I didn't really grow up.
It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to imagine it's been 10 years, but I know people who are younger than me that, yeah, so it's definitely been a while. So it's one of those things where people grew up with this, so it's definitely massive, and people have probably the same pressure that I would say. I almost want to say it's the same pressure that George Lucas might have been under when he created the prequels, because it's that, you know, everyone like loved, you know, the original trilogy, and he's going back to make new movies, and it's like, all right, this could be awesome. This Jar Jar character's great, and then people hated it. But like I've always still kind of liked Jar Jar, maybe because I was young at the time. You know, and that's just, and that's what he made it for. So I think I like that Filoni at least recognizes that there are certain points of material that he has had his hand in, both in the kind of post-Revenge of the Sith era with Rebels and this 2-3 years between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And he really wants to make sure he bridges the gap and tells a complete story to really make it feel like it was completed versus the way it ended when Disney bought Lucasfilm. So I like this article, and it was a really nice insight to see that Filoni is doing this not just as a sake of kind of like, okay, we're going to bring it back, but like this is a passion project that he is excited for and he's taking serious. And I'm glad, and I don't think I would have thought otherwise anyway, but it's nice that it's out there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Oh,
and I don't want to hijack it too much, but since we're talking about prequel stuff and Clone Wars, I don't know if everybody else heard this, but this past weekend at Gen Con, they announced that Clone Wars is going to be coming to the top two tabletop games, X-Wing 2nd Edition and Legion. So prequels and Clone Wars are making a renaissance. It's awesome. It's validation for everyone who was a fan of those, while everyone else was saying, oh, it's not as good. And it's like, you know what? It's got its day now.
That's awesome. I will say this. I did hear about that, and I knew you guys probably talked about it on JodoCast because you guys are the gaming podcast. But it you know, I had a lot of friends that were up at Gen Con this past weekend, and I didn't go, obviously, this time just because for various reasons. But, of course, Fantasy Flight had. I think my friend was telling me that, of course, they had floor space for the line for Fantasy Flight stuff because it's just so big. Oh.
We actually quit standing in line. We just got tired of like, no, there's stuff to do, so we'll get new X-Wings when they come out.
Yeah, there you go. You'll find out about it, yeah. Anyway, next bit of news. It has been announced, I guess, if you will, through the Disney's different websites that they have, that the new Walt Disney World Star Wars Hotel at Galaxy's Edge, they have filed permits with South Florida Water Management District to go ahead and have a brand new entrance to the park for guests of this hotel. So we've previously known that the hotel is going to be inside the actual park. It's going to be inside the Star Wars land, whereas all the other hotels are on the property, but they're not actually in the park. Like when you exit, you don't exit into the park. So they're adding a new entrance that's outside of the park just for this hotel. That as the, I guess, the second entrance, kind of like, I guess I would say, I can compare it to Disney's California Adventure and their Grand Californian Hotel. You have one entrance that's not in the park, essentially on one side. And then if you walk in, you can actually enter the park from the hotel itself. And that's what this hotel is going to have. It's going to let you be in the park in a Star Wars, exit into Star Wars land, if you will. So this is just kind of exciting. Like, it's not a rumor that you're going to be exiting into the park, but it will be confirmed that you're actually in the park because they've just filed with the Florida Water Management Company, or district, I guess, about it. What do you guys think about that? Just like being in the park, staying there.
I mean, wasn't the castle in Florida a hotel room for people as well?
I think there's a suite in the castle, and it's been used as like special giveaways. But I don't think it's like an actual hotel
like
you
legit,
can book.
Okay, all right. So this would be like a first.
You can't stay at the castle. Like this is the whole hotel will be in the park.
I mean, it kind of makes sense. There'd be an entrance on the outside of the park. Where are people going to park their cars, or how are they going to move in? You know,
that's true. I wonder if you'd be shuttled in some special way or whatever. But
I'm
sure
Disney's really good at shuttling people magically from place to place.
Yeah, it does say that there'll be limited on-site parking for it, and it seems valet parking will be made available. So my guess is most likely, if you drive there at the hotel, they're going to expect you to be off-site parking and valeted. But again, the hotel is supposed to be 100% immersive, and the story will touch every single minute of your day, because they are even going to give you clothes to wear. I don't know how.
What?
Incredible. Yeah, I don't know how in-depth...
Suppose you bring your own Jedi robes. I'm asking for a friend.
You could probably do that yourself.
Okay.
I'm sure you can, but I don't know if they'll have you do... Like, I don't know what they'll do, because I know Disney doesn't allow costumes for adults.
You have to do bounding, right? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Disney bounding. If you're an adult, little kids can obviously wear actual costumes, but adults can't because it's supposed to, make sure that you don't confuse the young children there if your costume's really good. So Disney bounding is where you would end up having an outfit that would mimic a character really or something like that. So if you're going to be a stormtrooper, you might end up having like slick black hair with a white suit or something like that, with maybe a belt, like a kind of a bigger belt or something like that, and some things that give you the accents to make it look like a stormtrooper costume, but you wouldn't actually be a stormtrooper even if you had the armor.
That's interesting. I totally didn't realize that would be a problem.
You're not allowed to wear costumes. So robes, I don't know. But the really interesting thing about the hotel, though, is it is supposed to be immersive. So I'm trying to find out if they're going to let you just stay like your Disney vacation a week there, or if it's going to be like, okay, hey, it's supposed to be, you're going to stay 2 days here at this property, and then you'll move to the traditional Disney hotel property when you go to the parks, because the Star Wars one is really only 2 days worth of immersive story that happens around you or something like that. But I will say, I'm excited just to see that there has no windows, and the windows are going to be LCD screens or LED screens, into space. So you're going to be seeing ships flying around and stuff like that. So that's kind of cool. So it's going to be immersive. It's going to be nice. The last bit of news I want to get into before we get into episode by episode on our first episode of Clone Wars was actually something I found completely not on a Star Wars site. It was about Disney and their streaming service. And I want to talk about it because last week, I believe, or the week before, we talked about Resistance and Jon Favreau's live-action Star Wars film or TV show being on the Disney streaming service, and how Danya talked about they actually have a streaming service in the UK already for Disney. We just don't have it here, and we're assuming it was due to some type of streaming rights or something along those lines, and that's why they just haven't done it yet. But Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, has said that they hope to launch their streaming app at the end of calendar end of 2019. So October, November, December of 2019. So not this year. But we also heard rumors that Resistance was supposed to come out this year, not next year. So this makes me wonder if Star Wars Resistance won't be exclusive to the streaming service, but more on a network or on Disney, one of Disney's networks like
Well, they might move XD. It once they have a service, though, right?
Yeah, I can see them doing something like that, like moving it from like Disney XD or it being on Disney XD and their streaming service or something along those lines. Evan, have you followed any of this Disney streaming and Resistance news at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what kind of... I mean, I guess there's been some, not a lot. And I think it's funny that they just recently consolidated all of their different Disney Channel streaming apps into the one singular app, and now they're talking about... I mean, they have been talking about moving that to a whole Disney umbrella streaming service of everything, where you're not tied to a cable subscription, which for... most of us listening to this or participating in this podcast, we're probably looking for every means of getting off of cable subscription and being able to stream this. And, I mean, two things really quick. I'm more than happy to pay Disney for access to Marvel and Disney and Star Wars. They're kind of the good version of EA. Because I have to go through EA to get Star Wars and FIFA and BioWare, but this is much more palatable.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last comment will be, whatever they have will be exponentially better than DC Universe streaming service that no one will get, because that Titan show looks like trash.
Oh, Teen Titans, though. Anyway.
No, just Titans.
Yeah. Anyway, I will say this, Iger does comment on that they already have, ESPN Plus is their standalone. They do have a streaming service now in the UK, but they also have a streaming service in the US that is tied to cable subscription. And with their merger with Fox, they're now going to own 60% stake in Hulu. So, you know, he did mention that, let's call it a giant aggregated play we're going to bring to the market, you know, whether it be sports play or we'll call it Disney play. So, of course, you can, if maybe you want sports and Disney, you can get bundled that together. So it sounds like they're thinking of options for bundling things. And, of course, he even recognizes that Disney won't be as busy, you know, the Disney won't have as much content as, say, a Netflix. It won't be anything close to the volume of Netflix in terms of that. And the price of Disney service will reflect that. So, you know, Disney charge, or Netflix charges, what, $10 a month now? I don't know. My rates have been going up and up.
Something like that.
Maybe 11 bucks for 4K or something. So it looks like the Disney price service will reflect that. So it'd be nice if it was like $5 a month for the Disney streaming service.
Very reasonable.
I'll be completely honest, that probably wouldn't prevent me from buying all the Star Wars films still on digital and on disc, but
like a true fan.
Yeah. You know, but it would be nice to go ahead and, you know, it'd be nice to have, what do you call it? You know, that option there. One last thing about streaming is Disney also tapped a former iTunes executive from Apple, to lead its push into streaming. And obviously Apple has done a really good job with streaming, not only the iTunes music store with movies, TV shows, and podcasts that we're on, you can download us from there, but also, you know, with their new music streaming service. So it is interesting that they've put a lot of different things in play. I did link to the Resistance Radio stuff, or the not Resistance Radio, that's us, the Star Wars Resistance show, where it was leaked that it's going to be 22 episodes. The first episode is slated to be air in Germany on October 13th. And that first episode is supposed to be called The Recruit. And some synopsis stuff has been released about the first episode. So it is one of those things where Resistance is supposed to come this year, where streaming service is not supposed to come till next year. All right. Anyway, guys, let's go ahead and jump into our first episode. I guess not first episode. It's our second episode with episode by episode. But it's the first episode of Clone Wars Season 1. So, Clone Wars Season 1, Episode 1, Ambush. So, before we get into kind of like recapping this real quick, what'd you guys think of just this being... So, Ben, this is probably a better question for you since this is the first time you've seen this. What do you think of this episode as the opener to an entire series?
Okay, can I rebound with a question really quick?
Yeah.
Does this episode count as the opening to the entire series because there's a movie?
Well, and that's what's interesting is, you know, and Evan, you I'm assuming you saw the movie in theaters, right?
Yes, I did.
So the movie was actually in theaters. It didn't air in broadcast till much later, as like a special, and they broke into three episodes, and I think they did it over 3 weeks, or maybe they did it as one night, but I know it wasn't like the first episode. The movie was not the first episode that aired on television. Ambush was. So it was definitely, the movie was definitely a precursor to it. And obviously the movie did set up a lot of things that kind of, not, I guess this episode didn't really, you weren't required to have seen the movie to see this episode, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, so.
Which makes for a good first episode.
Yeah, which I guess does make this a good first episode. But for me, thinking of the series as a whole, going back and watching it, I'm like, huh, I forgot that was the first episode. I remembered the episode, but I didn't expect this one to be what you would start the entire series off on. So, Ben,
right.
What did you
that
think?
That actually gets straight to the point that I was going to make, was like, it's kind of weak as like an opener to an entire series, because like, when I think of just like what I've seen of Clone Wars over the years, as far as just advertising or whatever, you know, Yoda's our main character in this episode. Like, where the heck are the main characters? You know? So, to open a series without the main characters of the series is interesting.
Yeah, well, you have to remember, there's a lot of main characters in the Clone Wars, because it does run for
right.
so long.
I guess so, what I mean is, like, someone who hasn't seen them, who's only seen like posters and advertising and action figures and stuff, I just assume that Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Padme are the main characters based off of what I've like been advertised to by. So just to not have that in the first episode is interesting to me. It felt like it was just setting up more stuff. It wasn't really like its own episode. Yeah.
That makes sense. So, yeah, so the first episode, quick synopsis is, Jedi Master Yoda must face off against Count Dooku's dreaded assassin, Asajj Ventress, and her massive droid army to prove the Jedi are strong enough to protect a strategic planet and forge a treaty for the Republic. Ventress fails against Yoda, so Dooku tells Ventress to kill the king of the planet, who wants to sign the treaty with the Republic. Yoda protects the king from Ventress, who then flees. So, it does have a couple different things. You know, the episode starts off with, what is the king's name? It's a Toydarian. I'm trying to remember the king's, king.
Tatanko?
Yeah.
Tatanko.
Tatank.
If I was a good journalist, I would have looked it up.
Katanko, I think it is. I have to rewatch it again. They only say it twice in the episode. But I didn't write down phonetically to say it, and I'm probably saying it wrong. But basically, he's trying to convince King Tatanko that the Republic.
Our apologies to all the Tardarians listening.
Yes, sorry, yes. I'm not the Tardarian. I can't do it right. You know, I'm trying here. But yeah, so basically, trying to convince him that the Republic need a base.
There we go.
Kantuko. You think it's Kantuko? I'm gonna say Kantuko now.
I can verify.
Basically, they want to build a Republic base in the Tardarian territory, and. It's interesting. This does set up, you know, having seen the entire series, it does set up something that happens later on, multiple seasons later. So it is kind of nice that you can see that they had a plan all the way back to the first episode for further in the series. But it is where Yoda is on his way to convince the king that, hey, join the Republic. And obviously, Count Dooku has sent Ventress there to say, no, the Republic is weak. Join us, the Separatists. You know, and you see a lot of this throughout the entire series is, hey, join us or them. Because it makes sense. You know, the Separatists are trying to pull away from the Republic because they just don't believe it works. And obviously we know that's a different plan because of Darth Sidious and Count Dooku being Sith Lords, obviously. But it starts off there, and Yoda and them are under attack the minute they land in system. And so they use escape pods to get out. And I thought this was really interesting that they used escape pods versus like a shuttle or something to get down there. Did you guys think about that at all, or is that just something that kind of just happened and you kind of just moved on with the episode?
Totally didn't notice.
Okay.
I didn't even really think about it.
Well, it was because the droids were shooting at everything, so he said, then launch all of them. Like, it was very Yoda-like on telling him like what to do. You know, like, sir, they're blasting everything there. It's like, well, then let's launch all of them. And of course, we'll make it out. So they made it to the planet, but of course they didn't land on Mark. They land kind of far away, and they then had to journey to meet the king and convince him. It almost reminded me of a game, if you will, where Yoda had to get, you know, past the territory. You know, there was canyons they had to get to, debris and different things that they had to get around. Finally, to get to the king to prove that they are, you know, who they are. You know what I mean? Like if I thought I was like watching almost an old school 80s, you know, like Double Dare type thing where they had to get through all this stuff to prove that they actually are the ones that, you know, the Tradarians should join the Republic versus the Separatist army. Do you guys have any feelings on kind of how the story moved along of Yoda with three clones trying to make their way to the king?
I mean, I've got some overall thoughts about the whole thing, because what you just said, Yoda getting to the king, is the entire episode. There's not much else to it. That's kind of it. But in that 22 minutes, whatever it is, we get several things that I think are noteworthy about this episode. I'm just going to go to my overall thoughts on it right now.
No, that's fine.
While I've got them fresh in my head. So one of the first things we get with this episode is Clone Wars, for the first of many times, showing us that not all the one-off characters of a species that we see in the movies are representative of the species. So, like, I think someone had in the notes here that they don't all talk like Watto. Watto is an individual of a species where they are all individually different. The second thing we get is a soft introduction to Asajj Ventress for people who didn't see the movie in theaters and didn't watch the Genndy Tartakovsky series or read the comics or the books. So basically people coming into this fresh. So it's a decent intro there. The third thing is an introduction to the clones as people, because we did not really get that in the films. We didn't get that at all in Attack of the Clones, and we got very brief look at that with Commander Cody in Revenge of the Sith. So Yoda acknowledging that the clones are individual people with their own identities is a huge setup for the whole rest of the series. We didn't get that at all in the Clone Wars theatrical release. And then the fourth and final thing that's super important is that we got a slight look at goofy, funny Yoda from Empire Strikes Back, and not just straight man, straight-laced, no funny business prequel Yoda for the first time.
I agree with you. I think the clones and Yoda are probably the two biggest things to take away from this episode. When watching it the first time, you know, the clones, we've never seen them really. Even if you go back to Revenge of the Sith and think about it, you know, Commander Cody is a little bit there, but he ends up just, you know, Order 66 is, and it's done. You know, it's very simple. You mm-hmm. see a little bit of it in the movie, the Clone Wars movie, where Rex and Ahsoka have a little bit of banter back and forth, but not really individualized. But the fact that Yoda mentions to the clones that they're not expendable, you know, when one of them gets injured, you can't leave them behind. That is something that makes it see that even though the clones are clones, you know, and when I say clones, like, do they have the same rights as normal humans? You know, they are the Republic's version of a droid army. They are a clone army, right? So no one that is individual and unique dies. But obviously, the Jedi see, when you think of the Jedi thinking about the Force, then it's a living, breathing thing. It surrounds us, it binds us, and everything. The clones, each one is living, breathing, and it surrounds them. So they are seen as individuals in the Force and through by the Jedi's eyes. And that's what makes it unique. Because I will say, this show does tackle a lot of different perspectives later on in the series. And this setup is very important. Ben, for someone who's seen it the first time, what was your impression of the clones from the get-go?
Well, I mean, I had written something like that in the notes for the show, was that I was kind of waiting the whole episode for, like, what was the hook? What was going to get me to watch more? And it was that scene where Yoda was talking about the clones' humanity and how they're all different, which I really kind of appreciated, considering the fact that, like, you know, I think in Attack of the Clones, like the movie, they talk about, you know, creating this army as a stronger version of the droid army, but they're still as expendable. And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know, because, like, you can talk to a droid and know that it's programmed, but, like, even though the clones are kind of programmed, they're still, like, they're biological, as opposed to the droids, which are technological. So, it was cool to kind of have that, like, breaking open the door to, you know, like, clones are people too, kind of mentality towards the whole thing. So I'm excited. That made me excited.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on it. I also like when you mentioned that not all characters, you know, we're able to see more characters like Watto. You know, we saw the Toydarians. They didn't speak like Watto, even though I broke into Watto's voice.
Right, I know. Because that's the funny thing is, like, as soon as I saw them, I was like, oh gosh, here it comes. And then it didn't. And I was like, oh, okay.
I know. Yeah, I'm Watto. I'm a Toydarian. All right. No, we all speak like this. I'm smart. I'm a Toydarian. You can't do Jedi mind trick on me. But no, it is one of those things where it's...
There you go.
I know, right? They don't sound like Watto. And just like every human doesn't sound the same. And I think it's nice to see that early on in the series. Because we do see this through a lot of different aliens. I think we even saw this recently in one of the novels where Han Solo goes, you know, speaks to a Gungan. It's like, this Misa, like, how many Gungans have you actually met? Misa, this is not how we all speak. That was one Gungan who had no riot in, like, I'm like, oh, that makes sense, you know. You know, Jar Jar was a special character. But really getting into the droids and the clones as kind of counter, you know, foils to each other. Ben, you put some notes in here that the droids are dumber than what we actually saw in what we saw in the movies. And I don't know if they actually are dumber, or it's just the battle droids, the B1 battle droids, have always kind of been portrayed that way. I think it might be right. Just because their iconic line from Phantom Menace of Roger, Roger, makes them seem kind of pushover, especially when like a simple force push has them look like they just fall over and stuff like that in the movies. I don't know. Like, right. I definitely think that you see a little bit more back and forth banter between the droids in the Clone Wars series, but it's hard mm-hmm. for me to separate them out from the movies. I guess, like, in my mind,
I think
Oh, I think it's very easy to separate the two.
Yeah, what I noticed, especially coming from my experience watching Battle Droids, is only from the movie. And really, I mean, I remember watching Revenge of the Sith and thinking, like, these droids are too comedic. It's like they've always been kind of that way, but something about them in Phantom Menace specifically, though they were for comedic relief sometimes, like, they were still kind of semi-threatening. Because you weren't really sure what they were capable of. And, you know, even in Attack of the Clones, actually, I felt that. And so Revenge of the Sith and also this episode, this first episode, have both changed kind of the way I see them. I kind of miss they're there for comedic relief when they're getting kind of sliced up and, you know, in large numbers by Jedi. But, like, for the most part, you know, they captured all of Naboo at the beginning of the first movie, so you're like, okay, these guys are bad news. But then all of a sudden, when they're not, it's kind of disappointing.
And I think they're easy to separate such that I greatly prefer the Clone Wars writing for them. I think that the writing for them is just better overall. They capture that sort of goofy, kind of dopey comedy that I think they were going for, and that applies pretty much across the board for many characters that show up in Clone Wars that we saw in the movies. The humor just comes across better in Clone Wars. The writing is snappier, the editing is better. It's like the timing, the comedic timing, I guess that's it. That's the thing. The comedic timing in Clone Wars is better than the movies for me. And I think for other people that I've talked to, that's just the biggest difference. You can, even with a bad joke with good timing on Clone Wars is better than the same joke with bad timing in the movies.
I'll agree with you on that.
I'd agree with that as well.
And I think that's kind of why I say I can't separate them, because in my mind, when I think of Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, I obviously think of Ewan McGregor, but when I think of Anakin Skywalker, I think of Anakin Skywalker from the Clone Wars series. When I think of battle droids, I think of the battle droids from the Clone Wars series. The conversations they have between them, it's like, keep firing. No, I don't see anything there. Fire is what I'm telling. Like, the really bad banter between the Commander B1 droid and the non-Commander B1 droid. And I think that's also why, like, when you get into other media, like, we talked about what was the novels that had Mr. Bones in it? Aftermath series with Empire's End and everything. When I'm thinking of Mr. Bones as a droid, I'm just, like, giddy, because I'm thinking of the Clone Wars style B1 battle droids, but this one painted blood red with, like, bones hanging off of him, like, from a chicken and stuff, to make him look more menacing. So I definitely think you're right. The writing for these characters maybe is not just comedic timing is better, but also just they have the time to actually flesh them out and focus on characters that might not have been focused on. We talked about this in the Clones, where mm-hmm. we didn't get to focus on the Clones at all in the movies, but now they become characters that, you know, that legitimizes their humanity, that each one is a person, and the Jedi treat them that way. Doesn't mean everyone will, but it means the Jedi will. As we move on through this, you know, through the, you know, the episode, Yoda and the clones go over multiple obstacles. A clone gets hurt, but Yoda says, "Don't worry, I'm going to help. No one's going to be left behind. They're still going to meet the king." And in the end, they finally meet the king. And Dooku tells them to kill Ventress, to kill the king. And at that point, it's the first time we see, at least in the series, unless you saw the movie, Ventress use her lightsabers and attempt to kill the king. And she doesn't get to, though, because Yoda uses the Force to stop her. He literally holds her still, which I found interesting thinking of the sequel trilogy. And Ben, I know you mentioned a couple things about Supreme Leader and linking it back to the sequel trilogy, but we saw Yoda literally freeze Ventress, which is something we saw Kylo Ren do in The Force Awakens multiple times. So would you guys, did you guys see that connection at all, or was that something that, you know, jumped out to you? I know this is your first time, Ben, and probably your fourth or fifth time like me, Ben, Evan, watching it.
Yeah.
I didn't make that connection immediately because I was just like, I think I was just sitting there waiting for, I'm like, okay, when's Yoda going to show up? You know, I need to, next, when I watch the second episode, I need to become 8 years old before I start it, because this, I was kind of like going into it with a really like, oh my gosh, kind of attitude. So,
well, I'll be honest, the first season is going to be, I'll be honest, as we're doing this, I'm thinking back, I'm like, man, we're going to watch the entire first season in the next half year. And it's, yeah, the first season is not the best season of Clone Wars, but I'm excited to get through it, cool, to get to
so
the
it's,
next
it's
couple
worth
seasons.
The, it's worth the pain.
It is. It's okay, definitely, cool. It's definitely worth it.
I'm,
you know,
I'm totally willing. I'm ready. I'm ready.
There are some gems.
Okay,
there,
cool.
I think there's more than just a couple gems, because when you think about this, well, this leads us to even like the rumors floating around. I didn't talk about this in the news section, but there's rumors talking about that Favreau's live action series is going to be about Mandalorians and Mandalore. And that's all because he does the voice of, was it Pre Vizsla? Yeah, he does the voice of Pre Vizsla, yep, on the show when he was doing Iron Man back in 08. So it was one of those things where he records that voice, and he learned all about the Mandalore and the Mandalorians and their lore from Dave Filoni. And now he's back doing a show, so there's a good chance that some of the stuff we learned in Clone Wars is going to make its way into the new live-action show that Favreau is going to be doing. So I definitely like that this show sets up a lot of those things, and Yoda is using stuff that we see in later media. Like I said, that freezing was something I didn't initially link to or think about when I saw it in The Force Awakens or anything else, but when we watch it, I'm like, oh, that's something that Kylo Ren did. And
it's also,
you know,
kind of nice to know that it's not like an exclusive to Sith ability, because I mean, I'd love to see, yeah, like Ghost Luke in Episode 9 use it. That's all. I'm not going to say anything else.
Yeah, no. Yeah, well, yeah. And I agree. It's definitely, yeah, I agree. It'd be nice to see some of the other things kind of come to fruition from it. But in the end, Yoda prevents Ventress from killing the king. And the king signs with the Republic. And we don't know any more of that. That's how the episode ends. It's pretty simple. And we have to wait till next week to go into the next episode. So any other last thoughts on Star Wars Clone Wars Episode 1, Ambush?
Nope.
All right. So this week's spotlight topic, I will say this spotlight topic is interesting. I just really wanted to dive into Thrawn a little bit again. Just because Thrawn has come back into the canon. We saw this with Rebels, and he was introduced in Rebels. And he also was also one of the main characters in the EU that fans just gravitated to and loved. Because it really started, you know, there was an article I linked here that was released not too long ago about an interview with Timothy Zahn talking about after Return of the Jedi, there really wasn't much. And it took some time until anything really came about. And it wasn't until Zahn released his first novel in the Star Wars series, Heir to the Empire in 91, that it became cool again, I guess, for Star Wars to be Star Wars. And Lucasfilm at the time really didn't have a plan like they do now. And how Thrawn has made it through both the EU and into the original and into the new canon, stuff. So, Ben, I know you didn't watch Rebels, but I know you've looked into a lot of Thrawn stuff, and I've linked some stuff for you. But Evan, yes, I know Evan, you read all the EU stuff like I did. And you've watched Rebels.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm assuming you've finished Thrawn Alliances like I have.
you'd be assuming wrong in the final point.
Oh, you're at the final point. Wait, sorry. So you've got at least some of it, and you see Thrawn interact with both Anakin Skywalker and Vader, so you've seen a little bit of that dynamic.
Sure, sure.
So,
oh yeah.
So thinking of Thrawn and kind of thinking back at where he is now, you know, just to kind of put it in perspective for those who don't know much about Thrawn and kind of revisit, Thrawn is a Chiss from the Unknown Region in the galaxy of Star Wars, if you will. And when you look at the sequel trilogy right now, the sequel trilogy, the First Order comes from the Unknown Region. We saw this when we talked about the Aftermath novels and, you know, kind of how they kind of were fleeing away, and they come from the Unknown Region. And so it's really interesting to think that Thrawn and the sequel trilogy kind of could be intermingled a little bit, especially after the first Thrawn novel, when we know that Eli Vanto is now with the Chiss Ascendancy out past the known regions, kind of learning information. You know, is he going to show up in the sequel trilogy at some point? Kind of like when we talk about Rex being on Endor as that one character, are we going to be able to look back and be like, oh, that was Eli Vanto in, you know, The Last Jedi as one of the guys who captured Finn and Rose? Like, that was Eli Vanto. He had returned with the, you know, with the First Order. Like, how do we know that's not going to be the case in the future? So what do you think about this, Evan? What do you think about, like, the idea of Thrawn being a character that is now canon coming from the same area that the First Order came from?
It's very interesting because I don't see Thrawn or the Chiss Ascendancy as being too crazy about the First Order as much as they would have been, you know, because they're obviously curious about seeing what sort of allies the Empire could be. But I would think they would view the First Order much the same way that we and the characters in universe do, would be a bunch of upstarts trying to emulate the Empire without as much ethos or pathos as the Empire had. Because the Empire, I mean, I'm not going to say that it's good, but it's a different animal than the First Order. And I don't see any of the Chiss really wanting to deal in a cooperative way with the First Order. If anything, I'd like to think that the threat in the Unknown Regions that the Chiss Ascendancy is so worried about is something related to Snoke.
That's what's interesting, and that's why I kind of wanted to bring this up, is because there's so many different things that can all be tied together here, and they can tie things from
The Yuuzhan Vong, either one.
Well, I think we've renamed the Yuuzhan Vong to Grist at this point. So I think that's what it is. But when it comes down to it, you know, you have, even in the original series, the EU of Zan's books, when he talks about Thrawn, you know, Thrawn leads the Imperial Remnant, and he's a different leader, a very different leader than Vader or Palpatine. And I think in this article, it even talked a little bit about how when he created Thrawn, he wanted someone different than Vader and someone different than Palpatine. He wanted someone who was powerful, not because of his force use, but because of how methodical and how smart he was as a tactician. Kind of like what I think George Lucas was going for originally with Tarkin, which was kind of just thrown away because he was killed in the first Death Star, at least in from that movie's frame, perspective. So this is kind of what when you look at this and compare this to the sequel trilogy, which is obviously what we're kind of, why I want to revisit this, is when you look at it through the sequel trilogy, you have lines like, the Supreme Leader is wise, the Supreme Leader knows, you know, he's a very different type of leader. He's not, he is a little old and kind of decrepit and kind of, you know, emperor-like, if you will, but he's very different. Like, he doesn't sit in the hood. He doesn't command that same dark side power. He's wearing, like, pajamas and relaxing, if you will. And that's partially because he knows so much. You know, he does have a strong command of the Force. He does have a strong command of different things. But it is more, I would say, Supreme Leader is closer to a Thrawn character than the Emperor or Vader. And I'm wondering if some of Zahn's ideas that was in the original trilogy, in his original trilogy, is kind of what we get in, you know, in the sequel trilogy. And could we take some of that and guess where the new sequel trilogy is going to go or where it's continuing to go? Does that make sense?
I'm wondering from just like a pure marketing standpoint. You seem to be getting at that, you know, they could throw some surprises in episode 9 related to this kind of stuff.
Well, and I don't want to say that is the case, but, you know, I'll tell you that, and this is a spoiler if you haven't seen Rebels, and Evan, you might have to say yay or nay as Mikey going, you know, did he go off on the deep end here? But we know Thrawn and Ezra have left kind of the known galaxy, right? They've kind of left the known region because they went to hyperspace, through, not with a ship, but through Purgles. And obviously, Thrawn has knowledge of the unknown regions and stuff like that. And I'm not saying he set up the First Order, but he may have known what it is because he was an Imperial, a Grand Admiral, you know, one of the highest ranking Imperial officers. And he's from this, even if it's not Thrawn that comes back, but the Chiss make their way into some of what we see in episode 9 to tie all these things together. Because I feel like it's one of those things where Star Wars does a good thing of making the universe feel really big, but at the same time making it really small. What I mean about this is you have this whole universe that's been made, and we have all these planets that we've discovered and seen and visited through books and comics and movies, but our main stories, our main things always revolve the same people. You know, when you think of like episode 9, a good example is they're bringing back Lando, which I am all for. I'm not against seeing the stories of Han, Leia, Lando, Luke again by any means. I love that. But it brings the same people back versus, you know, something different. And even with Rebels, it being completely different people and kind of a different beast, we still saw Vader make an appearance. We still saw the Emperor make an appearance. We saw Mon Mothma and people we knew all make appearances and all play a part. And, you know, what is the likelihood of, you know, Ezra Bridger, this kid from Lothal, have a run-in with someone named Thrawn, is the same guy who meets Lando Calrissian in a, you know, a smuggler deal, and also meets Princess Leia and Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, how does this one kid hit all those characters that we all know? So it makes the universe feel really small. And they love to do this because it ties it all together. Like, oh my gosh, all these paths have crossed over time. Doesn't mean that Obi-Wan spent a bunch of time with Ezra. He literally spent all of, you know, a few minutes with him and told him to go. But it is one of those things where it did cross paths. And Thrawn has made it into... He's become such a fan favorite, not just before the EU purge, if you will, the Order 66 of the old canon, to be the, you know, but he has made it back into the new canon through a TV show, has had two novels written about him, and even in the TV show where he dies off, he doesn't really die off. They leave it open for him to come back some way to play some part in the bigger picture. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I think they would be hard-pressed to fit Thrawn and his larger story into episode 9. I think if we were writing it, if the guys who want to remake The Last Jedi were to put their efforts into writing episode 9, not that they should, because they're all awful people, they would try to squeeze in these stories that we love from the EU meshed with the sequels. But I think what's more likely, that I think would blow a lot of minds and would be everybody's huge and give the story its due, would be either a standalone or a side series of movies, of actual movies, not just TV series, but movies about Thrawn and give him his due outside of the context of the Skywalker story.
I'll agree with you on that. I think that would be interesting and way to do it. Yeah, just because, you know, when you think of Thrawn's character and Timothy Zahn, you know, Timothy Zahn mentioned, you know, his philosophy before the sequels came out was that Star Wars was not the kind of thing where you killed off any major characters. You know, his logic behind that was, we can't kill off major characters either. Either Wedge or Lando would not have survived the second Death Star, and they weren't even huge characters. So you put them in types of stories where they're in danger, but they have to figure a way out of it, and you'll be happy in the end. I think because of his philosophy from before and now, even with the writing between Dave Filoni and them with his characters, you know, with Ron's character, it is interesting that they may make it to where some of these characters won't die, if you will. You know, I think we saw this in the sequel trilogy where right away we had, you know, Han die. Now, was there a reason for Han's death? Yeah, it was definitely, it moved Kylo's character forward a little bit more. We know Harrison Ford always wanted to get a death on screen. So it just made sense. We have Luke passing, going off, you know, becoming one with the Force in The Last Jedi, which makes a lot of sense. You know, he had given up on all things, but now he has reconciled with the Force so much so that he became one with it after he was able to come in and save the day and become the legend that he had fought so far hard to get rid of. You know, and that doesn't mean he won't be back. And now we have, you know, Leia, we know maybe she will survive, you know, episode 9. We don't know how they're going to use the footage, but, you know, with Carrie Fisher passing, there's a good chance that Leia will be passing. We don't know if Lando will be passing, but we know that there's other characters that might be there. And Thrawn, having been this pivotal character in two eras, if you will. You know, the most recent novel with Thrawn revolves around Thrawn having met and working with Anakin Skywalker, and Thrawn now working with Darth Vader, who, you know, in the previous novel, Thrawn kind of has an idea that Vader is Anakin Skywalker, but never mentions it. Because, you know, you don't want to tell Vader that, you know his dark little secret, because there's a good chance he'll turn his lightsaber onto you and you won't survive. And Thrawn's smart enough about it. But yeah, I'm kind of excited to see where Thrawn would come, because a lot of what Zahn set up, you know, everything, just to put it in perspective, Timothy Zahn created the planet Coruscant, which was heavily used in the prequels. And a lot of Zahn's main stories was he created, you know, Jason and Jaina Solo, which were Han and Leia's kids. So, like, the obvious pairing of Han and Leia came from him. And again, I don't know if it's so it was kind of obvious in the trilogy, but like them having kids came from it. Their son, you know, Jason, falling to the dark side and killing his aunt, obviously Mara Jade. There's a very unlikely chance of her making it back in as Mara Jade, but him falling to the dark side and becoming, you know, Darth Cadus was definitely something that was part of his stories, and he kind of set that in motion. And Kylo Ren is kind of the same way. You know, it was Han and Leia's son, got seduced and fell to the dark side. And now he's doing, you know, he kind of set the framework for where our sequel trilogy is. And, of course, his main character, Thrawn, hasn't really become part of this trilogy yet. Like you said, like, it'd be nice if they give him a movie and kind of do their own thing with him. But I feel like there's, because they introduced him in the shows and something else, there's something else where Thrawn can come in and kind of link in. It doesn't necessarily have to be a huge thing, but I almost wonder if he's part of the First Order, or, you know, just kind of observing and learning still.
He'll probably show up at the end and snap his fingers and destroy half the galaxy.
No, that's the other Disney property that happens in. The alien does that.
Are they not the same universe now?
Well, technically, they're all owned by Marvel, or Marvel does all the comics, right. So there's a chance.
There's a chance.
Well, that oh, there's man, that brings up a whole nother side of this. Evan, what would that crossover just is not going to happen today. We're not going to talk about that possibility.
I will defer to Patton Oswalt on that one.
That should be an
that's true. Dark. Well, Patton Oswalt definitely has was that the, what do you call it? the monologue he did.
Yes. 10 minute long.
10 minute long monologue about Star Wars and Marvel and that universe all being one universe. Anyway, guys, any thoughts on Thrawn? I don't want to go too long into this episode, but you know, just as a Thrawn revisited, it is one of the things where this character has shaped so much of the sequel trilogy and was such a critical role and kind of helped shape the EU previously.
I'm glad that we are getting more stories. I was dubious about not his Rebels appearance, but about the first book, just the Thrawn book from last year, just because I was afraid it would be a retread or a watered-down version to make him fit the Star Wars that we have now. Not that what we have now is not good, but that what we had before was so complicated because it kind of had to be by nature really complicated. But they gave us really good twists and turns and surprised me in a lot of really good ways just with the first book. So I'm so looking forward to what we get in Thrawn's future with the aftermath of Rebels. And without getting too spoilery about it, you know, the Twitter and the internet has just been like, here's the story that we want featuring the characters that survived that series. And we know what we want to see from that. And it has to do with a Clone Wars character going out to find Ezra. So let's do that series. That would be amazing. I don't care what we got to do. That's the one that we want.
Oh, well, I'm sure that's going to come because he made the joke about it. We know it's all going to happen. So, but when? Like, we don't know. Like, it's, and that, and maybe that's going to tie into the new trilogy at some point or the end of episode 9. So we'll just have to wait and see. And I'm just excited where, I will say, after Solo, after The Last Jedi, I know a lot of the fandom had mixed feelings about these films. I loved them. They are among my favorite films to rewatch. But it is one of those things where I think this stuff right here, the Thrawn novel, the cartoons like Clone Wars and the cartoon Clone Wars coming back, has really made me even more excited for where the fandom and where these stories will take us. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, I think anything, and this could be taken badly also, or you know, taken with a negative connotation, but I want the positive side of this to come out. Anything with Dave Filoni at the helm, whether we're talking new Clone Wars or Resistance, just gimme, 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 gimme. And Sabine and Ahsoka go save the universe. Absolutely,
dude.
I want that.
I want.
TV
I want
show
that buddy cop.
Book,
I want. I want that buddy cop show. I do. I like. That's what it
yes.
is.
Yes.
You know, Adventures to the Galaxy. So Ben, with your limited knowledge on Thrawn, I know you're going to get into those Thrawn novels soon, and you're watching Clone Wars. What do you think? What do you think about Thrawn and the impact of some of the things that we've talked about comparing them?
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, I'm all for tying things together. I think, and I'm going to reference another fandom here, but did anyone see the recent Fantastic Beasts trailer for the new one? Came out last
yeah.
week?
Yes.
Okay, so it looks really good. The only beef I have with it is that any non-Harry Potter fan would have no idea what's happening. And I think, as a person who hasn't really delved into the EU a whole lot, if they're going to incorporate some of this stuff in episode 9, it needs to be in a way that is pleasing to the people who have read or watched the other material, but the people who haven't, it can't confuse them. Which is a really hard kind of line to walk, because you need to please both sides of the fandom. But I'm all for whatever, as long as it's not like, oh, well, obviously you have totally read these 45 novels and watched these TV shows to understand this. So
yeah.
That's the only thing I have, but I'm excited for whatever, you know, I'm game for anything.
Well, I think I hear your concerns, but I feel like Dave Filoni and the Lucasfilm story group would make sure that any characters that are brought in are not going to be brought in as, like, even if Thrawn is brought into episode 9, he won't be a main character. He'll be either mentioned in passing, like as a comment, to link it together, or show up, but not be a main character, but just to set up something. Think of like the Marvel, like you mentioned, think of like the Marvel stuff.
I think the problem is he's too cool looking to be just a side character. Well, you know? If they're going to bring Thrawn in, it's going to be like all out.
Well, and I almost feel like, see, Star Wars doesn't do like the after credits scene. You know, think back to like the first Avengers, when that's when we get first introduced to Thanos, and then we had how many movies in between that first introduction to Thanos till we finally get Avengers, three,
so where he actually characters. Like, Thranos.
Well, I don't know if you'd call it Thranos, but it's still, but yeah, like I'm sure there's gonna be there's gonna be something there that's gonna tie, get him into it, because he is such a amazing character that I can't imagine them, not using him. Plus, like, I will say this, like, John Hamm, would be an amazing Thrawn, so yeah, let's see, I bet you there's even fan pictures of it. I'm just going to do a quick Google search. Oh, it's there, look at that, it's already there. Let me pull this picture for you guys to see. I don't even have to do... Oh, let me save this picture so you guys can see it. But yeah, like, John Hamm would be the it's kind of like when everyone was saying, like, Donald Glover would make the perfect young Han Solo. Or young Lando Calrissian. There it is. Like, John Hamm would just be the perfect Thrawn. Like, he's got that face for it. He could be menacing. And again, Thrawn speaks very... Not fast, but he speaks slowly with precision, if you will. And so I can see, John Hamm being Thrawn, from all the stuff he's been. So they have an opportunity to please the fandom at large and introduce a character that people who don't watch the cartoons, the TV shows, that don't read the books, don't read the comics, can like latch onto, like, oh, he's a good actor, and I like what they've done here, and we'll see where it goes. So that's our Thrawn Revisited. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about Thrawn as more comes out, and eventually we'll do our Thrawn Alliances novel breakdown as a spotlight topic. Anyway, any last thoughts before we move on?
Let me know when you plan to do the Thrawn Alliances spotlight topic so I can try to read it before then.
Yes, we'll make sure. I'll announce it a couple weeks before so people have time. Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. As always, I am Mikey B.
I'm Ben.
I'm Evan.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.